The Entrepreneur's Library, episode 141.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Library,
the only book-centric podcast that reviews all the top-selling business books and shares authors' perspective firsthand. This is your resource to finding the next great book
that will enable you to grow personally and professionally.
Welcome your host, Wade Danielson.
Welcome back to the Entrepreneur's Library. Today we have Diana Boer, author of What More Can I Say? Why Communication Fails and What to Do About It. Welcome, Diana, and thank you for joining us on the Entrepreneur's Library.
Thank you. It's great to be with you, Wade.
We take just a moment to introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about you personally before we dive into the book.
Yes, I've been working with executives and people who want to improve their communication for about three decades, coaching people, teaching business writing, technical writing, presentation skills, executive presence, and just working with organizations who want to improve their productivity by increasing their effectiveness with the communication flow and anything that has to do with a communication strategy and structuring their message.
So thank you for sharing that. And now let's jump right into your book. What More Can I Say? Why Communication Fails and What to Do About It. Which was just made, I mean, when we say just made available January 6, 2015. And Diana, we're going to move quickly, but we're here to cover the top questions that our listener / future reader would like to get answered. And the first one is, what was the inspiration behind writing What More Can I Say?
Actually, would you believe it's all this political noise that you hear? You know, for months now, we've been into the situation where both sides politically are engaged in what I call an uncivil discourse. You know, neither side's listening to the other side. And then there's just inaccurate information on the internet swirling around everywhere, information overload. On social media, you hear people passing on information. You read information that's not correct. And sometimes you just want people to say, time out, let's get it straight. And if you think about it, every relationship that you have is built on interactions, conversations you've had. There's nobody that you interact with in your personal life or in your business life that relationship didn't start by a conversation. And in a business, everything that happens as a result of communication. So basically, I just thought when I sit down to try to unravel some miscommunication in a business or in an organization, why is it that people can't change somebody's mind? You know, they come up with a logical explanation of why they did what they did or why they want you to improve this or that, and the other side just doesn't listen, even when it's to their benefit. So I thought, you know, I've got to look into this. What's the research behind why people can't persuade effectively? And that's basically why I wrote the book.
So what makes your book different from others regarding the same or similar topic?
Well, as you know, I've written a lot of books on this same topic, and most of them are their tips. They're applied to the individual. They're based on a lot of personal experience, but I tried to base this book on really sound research. Not that other books aren't based on research, but not just on survey data and not just on what, 500 people said in this organization, but I went back to academic studies, to really scientific, psychological research and in the social area and into the healthcare field, and just looked at what makes someone act like they act and react to messages like they react. What makes someone in the healthcare field heal faster? What makes somebody give a bigger tip at a restaurant? What is it that makes you like somebody when you go into a store to buy something and then you walk into another store and you think, I would not buy anything from that person. You know, I don't believe anything they say about this washing machine or this car. I looked at the research and then decided, what is it that we can take from all those situations and across all industries and apply it to our everyday conversations. When we make a sales pitch, when we're trying to persuade our college student to stay in school, when we're trying to present our business, our consulting business, our new service offering. What are those takeaways that we can apply in our everyday situation and make it much more scientifically sound?
How do you suggest the reader engage with your book? Did you design it to be read from front to back, or where people can go in, jump in and jump out based on the information that they need at that time?
That's the way I designed it. You can read it. I hope it's readable all the way through and people will be engaged, because I use concrete examples of how people have done what they've done. So it is meant to be entertaining. It's a very fast read. The people who I sent galleys ahead of time read it and said, you know, I sat down and I read this in 2 hours. But yes, the principle, I've laid it out into what I've called the 9 laws of communication. If you do this, your message is going to fail. And then there's a corollary in the same chapter saying, but here's the opposite of that. And the opposite will be the reverse and how you can change that situation. And so I give you the research behind these suggestions. And then they're just very concrete suggestions to improve your success rate in changing somebody's mind or changing their heart and their belief system. And the key points in the chapter are the headings. So if you wanted to, you actually could just pick up that law, that chapter, and go through and read all the headings, and you would have the key points. So it's very easy to skim and have the information at your fingertips.
Very good. So Diana, now that we know the background, the purpose of the book, let's take a deep dive into the contents. Will you take the next couple of minutes and really give myself and the reader a great idea of what they can expect out of your book?
Sure. One of the laws, I consider all of them very much more what I would say on an equal footing. Some people say, well, what's the most important? If I had to say the most important, I would say the very first one, which is trust. If you don't trust someone, you're never going to believe them. So I started out with that as saying it's foundational. And most people don't realize, although they would say that, they would say, well, sure, you got to trust somebody to believe them. But they don't realize how they communicate distrust. And there are many ways that you communicate distrust that you're unaware of. For example, just standing in a party. Let's say you're standing in the lobby, a cocktail party, before you go into a big meeting, industry meeting, Toastmasters, wherever. And just having your body angled slightly so that your feet are pointed away, that communicates to somebody, I'm trying to escape. I don't really want to be engaged with you. And of course, we know about having darting eyes, so you're darting your attention away from someone. You know not to do that. But just being inconsistent, telling somebody, I'll do something, I'll follow through, I'll get in touch with you next week, and not doing that. Tell them you'll have a report to them or you'll email them at a certain time, and you don't do that. You just have to do that once. That one inconsistency says, you can't trust me. And you can spend months building a relationship with someone and fail to follow through one time, and you've lost trust. So again, that's foundational. The second law that I talk about is the difference between monologue and collaboration. Leaders often, and particularly this is true of entrepreneurs, when they make a decision, they think of the situation, the pros, the cons, they go through all the reasoning, and then they tend to think, well, let's do this quickly, easily, and they announce a decision, and then expect people to go along. And frequently they'll say, well, anybody have a problem with that? Or what do you think about this? Is there any feedback? And when they don't get feedback, they're puzzled, or they don't get people's buy-in to that change, and they're puzzled. And they say, well, I gave people a chance to speak up. Nobody said anything. I thought everybody was aboard, yet they're not really buying into this. They're not committed to it. And of course, they thought their approach was one that gave people a chance to say something, but yet it was efficient. It was not time consuming. It was just an efficient process to get something done. But the way other people often look at that is that they were, quote, given no chance for input. People believe their own data. And what I mean by that is they like to have a part in that decision making. You can't expect people to really buy into change if they don't get to collaborate on that change, even if it takes more time. And as I was interviewing different executives, I interviewed quite a few executive at that executive level, C-suite officers, on this book. And one of them expressed it very well when he said, I never like to give my team a cooked gourmet meal. When I come up with an idea, he said, I like to give it to them half-baked. Now, I know that's a pejorative term in certain situations, but with communication, he says, I like to throw it out there when it's only half-cooked and half-baked so that they can continue to finish cooking it till it's a gourmet meal. Because once they have input to that meal, they feel like they own it. They are much more committed to it. And the reason I think that many leaders don't do that is they don't want to share the credit. If it goes really well, then they can say it was totally my idea. I came up with the whole thing. But it's extremely important, even though it might be more time consuming. Another law that I talk about in the book is why communication fails to persuade sometimes is because it's complex. Complex language obscures ideas and priorities. People don't know, you know, which fire should I fight? If things look hard, they feel hard, then people are slow to do them. But communication that is really successful in persuading is clear. It's simple. Clear language sharpens the focus, and it really drives action. In simplicity, what I mean by that, it's not necessarily shorter, although usually short works. Simple ideas, short sentences, simple words. But a leader really needs to hone in on what is the most important priority, the most important idea, and be able to synthesize. It becomes a core leadership skill to be able to say what you want done in a sentence, to say a mission statement in a sentence or phrase, 6 or 8 or 10 words, not these mission statements that come out to be a paragraph because people can't execute on that. If they can't understand it and it takes them three or four sentences to do it, they certainly can't execute on that. Another key thing in making messages just totally fail is what I call dilution versus distinction. It's when you have a long list of advantages or qualifications or benefits to your product or service, and you try to present them all rather than focusing on what is distinctive. It's really called what someone else has referred to a long time ago as the presenter's paradox. And this was in the research way. This is one of the things that just was so fascinating to me. And that is that buyers and readers and whoever's listeners tend to average rather than add. And here's what I mean by that. I give a lot of examples of this, and the research bears it out. There were 8 different studies done on this. Let's say you're running a resort, and you're going to offer in your product or your resort 4 or 5 benefits. And one of the benefits is that all the equipment at your resort is free. There's no rental charge once you're a guest there. And the buyer is trying to decide, or potential visitor is trying to decide, should I go or should I not? Oh, 1 to 10, I'm ranking the benefits. And I say, oh, that's a 10. Let's give that a 10. And you say, okay, another benefit of that resort, going to that resort as resort A as opposed to resort B, is it's very close to the airport, so we won't have to have local transportation once we fly there. Oh, that's great. Let's give that a 9. That's nice. And then you say, another benefit is it's close to the beach. We don't have to go, be around a hotel swimming pool. It's right close to the ocean. Oh, that's great. They give that a 10. And then you say, oh, by the way, everybody's bilingual there. and you think, oh, well, that's no big deal. You know, we speak the local language. That's no big deal. Just give that a four. So the person who's listening or reading this advertisement about your organization says, okay, that's a four. We gave it a 9, a 9, and a 10. Okay, that averages out to be about an 8. All right, let's rate that resort an 8. And then they look at another resort, and maybe that one's a 10. Well, you lose out. Whereas if you had just told that listener 3 things about your organization, all the rental equipment's free, and it's close to the water, both of those things I rated a 10, you would have come out better. In other words, telling them fewer things that are the most important to them, you would rank higher in that buyer's mind than if you tell them everything and some of those things are not so important to them. So if you understand what I'm saying here, that when you distill your distinctive advantages and focus on those, it's far more important. You're far more persuasive than if you try to tell them everything about everything, and some of those things don't matter. So those are just some of the principles in the book about persuasion that I think were fascinating and borne out about the persuasive techniques. You don't just happen onto them. If you can actually base what you're doing to be persuasive on concrete research, then you know where you're going, whether you're talking, whether you're presenting, whether you're trying to sell or persuade your next door neighbor to get their dog locked up so he doesn't wake you up at night.
So Diana, you've just covered a ton of very valuable information, content and context. And this next question is to help break it down even further for the future reader. And that's, if the reader could only take away one concept, principle or action item out of your entire book, what would you want that to be?
It's hard to do that for one thing. I would give you two. The first one I would say is that words matter. Words control how they think. The second one I would say is never depend on logic alone to build a persuasive argument. You have to address the emotional side of an issue as well. Even if the outcome of a decision or an action will benefit the listener, they don't always think logically. They want a logical explanation, but the listener cannot process the logical explanation to something or reasons for something until you help them process and go through the emotional part. So you need both, not just an explanation.
Excellent. And Diana, do you have a favorite quote from your book or maybe one that's resonated with the audience so far?
Yes. I used quotes at the beginning of every chapter, and I like this one from Joel Osteen. He says, "You can change your world by changing your words. Remember, death and life are in the power of the tongue." And I agree with that wholeheartedly.
That's huge. That's very powerful. We'll definitely put that in the show notes so people can go back and reflect on that as well. And this next question, Diane, I have to ask because obviously the listeners or the reader that's listening right now loves books. So if there was only one book you could recommend based on the way that's impacted your life, maybe created a lifestyle change, what would that be?
Well, I'd recommend two. I like the book of Proverbs because it tells you how to run a business, your marriage, how to parent, customer service, and how to build wealth. But this maybe a secular book I like is Anne Lamott's Traveling Mercies. And F. Scott Fitzgerald's the classic, The Great Gatsby. I've always loved that book. And I just think about that one very often. And Lamott's, of course, Traveling Mercies is a more recent book. And I love that one as well.
That's the first time that one's been recommended. So, Daya, before we depart, can you recommend the best way for our listeners to get more information on you and your book, What More Can I Say?
Yes, they can go to whatmorecanisaythebook.com. And that will take them to the book site where they can find some additional resources. Actually, we have a list of all these 9 principles, and they can get that list and download it, and it will give them a summary of the key books. And there's also a discussion guide if they are interested in buying books, maybe for their entire team. There's a leader's discussion guide for a sack lunch discussion for their group.
So first of all, I just want to say thank you for coming on and sharing your book with us.
Oh, sure. I enjoyed being with you, Wade, and I hope these tips were beneficial to the listeners.
Thanks again for listening in today. If you'd like more information on Diana or her book, What More Can I Say? Just check out the show notes at theelpodcast.com.
Looking for your next book idea?
Head over to theelpodcast.com,
where Wade shares his amazing resource, the top 10 business books recommended by over 500 entrepreneurs, with you for free.
That's theelpodcast.com.
Till the next time, keep it on the EL.